All right, my friends, welcome back to Anti-War Radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. And my guest today is Elise Dulare from Amnesty International. They've just put out their world report. And my interest today is finding out all about the human rights situation in Afghanistan over the last year. Welcome to the show, Elise. Pardon me. Elise?
Elsie.
Is it Elsie?
Yeah.
Pardon me.
That's okay.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Thank you.
Okay, good. It's a very interesting, very sad report on Afghanistan in Amnesty International's new country report. You can find the link, by the way, from the stressblog.com. Ken blogged it just 2 or 3 days ago, and you can find the link to the country reports there. And I guess, can you just sort of give us an overall of what is the situation like for the average guy living, say, I don't know, on the outskirts of Kabul?
Well, it's not very hopeful at this point, from all that I can tell. By the way, I have been in Afghanistan 5 times since the summer of 2004. And I do not represent Amnesty International when I go there. I am a teacher trainer in the province of Ghazni, which is southeast of Kabul. One quote that really worried me on my latest trip this April came from some of the female teachers that attended my training, and they were saying that they don't feel hopeful. They feel like poverty is continuous. They don't get paid often for the work they do, and they've become more sympathetic of the Taliban again. When I asked them, why would they feel that? I mean, as women, they are now able to teach. They said they'd prefer to stay home, feel safe, and rather than teach in the, under the circumstances as they are right now.
So female teachers who, from my understanding, would be the some of the primary targets of the Taliban if they were in power, they prefer the Taliban now.
I can't say this is a general statement, but that was a quote which alarmed me greatly.
Yeah.
Because I've been working with these teachers over the last 3 years. The teachers, female teachers, are definitely a target for the Taliban. And I think it is important for me to state here that aside from the human rights report that was released some weeks ago, that there was also a report released which concerned the Taliban by Amnesty International. This was a very important report which balances the criticism, so to speak, of the U.S. presence in Afghanistan. The Taliban is definitely targeting women who are in officials from the government, and that includes teachers. Some teachers have been beheaded. 230 schools have been burned. Human rights activists, especially the female ones, have been receiving death threats. There was a famous woman, the regional director for the Ministry of Women's Affairs in Kandahar, was killed last year. So it's very tenuous.
It sounds like all the. It sounds like when the Americans came, they said, "Okay, you know, anybody with the slightest bit of liberalism, come out and take part in the new government. We'll help you. We'll protect you." And then they did that, but we failed to protect them. So now we've just put all these people in danger for being collaborators with us and for acting Western and acting like the foreigners, right?
Well, I'm not sure if I agree with that. I think that the U.S. Indeed has very close ties and a lot of power over the government there. President Karzai is unable to exercise his power outside Kabul. He's often called the mayor of Kabul as opposed to the president of the country.
Right.
Because he has not been able to consolidate his power beyond the capital. I think that in terms of the U.S. assistance there, that a lot of things have happened for the good, and there's been a definite increase in participation in more democratic ways, and that includes women are able to participate in jobs and also in the government. However, I think that outside the big cities like Kabul, that there are two main kind of things going on. In the northeast, we see a rise of warlordism. These are people who the CIA backed in the 1980s against the Russians and were trained by the Russians. They're generally called people of the Northern Alliance, and they have established major powers in the north and east of the country. And then in the south and northwest, I should say, and in the south and east, we see a resurgent Taliban, which has been helped in some detrimental way by the conduct of the U.S. and its allied forces there. And that conduct includes the human rights abuses within their secret detention centers, like the Salt Pit, which is in Kandahar. And
the salt
also
pit
at
in
some
Kandahar.
Forwarding bases where members of human rights organizations like ourselves are not allowed to go and check what really is going on.
Right. Now, can I stop you there and ask you to tell me about the salt pit?
The salt pit is known as a secret prison that was operated. I don't know if it's still being used right now, but that is where detainees have been rumored to be to having been severely abused and tortured by the security forces of Afghanistan, the secret police.
And you say that these prisons and their notoriety and also things like airstrikes that kill civilians, that this is helping the Taliban's resurgence.
Yeah, unfortunately. It is a very hard to understand the conflict. Here we have the resurgent Taliban and the Afghan army together with the U.S. and NATO forces, or ISAF. They're trying to get rid of the Taliban, basically, but the Taliban often hides out in civilian homes, especially in Kandahar and Helmand. And when they get bombed, a lot of civilians get killed in those incidences, but those are innocent civilians, and that has really raised anger towards the U.S. and international forces there, even to the extent that President Karzai has demanded that the U.S. and international forces take much greater care in how they bomb suspected Taliban sites there.
Well, this may be outside your area of expertise or opinion stating, but just from my Texas point of view, seems to me like we supposedly won that war back in December of 2001, And all airstrikes should have ended then. This is, what does this have to do with an air war? There's parts of Afghanistan that our soldiers can't go without having planes clear the path for them?
Yeah, unfortunately, that seems to be the situation. I think that when the Taliban moves within the civilian population and hides out, that it's very difficult for the U.S. and allied forces to attack them, basically. I'm not sure if I can say more to that question. I do want to correct something I said about the salt pit. It's actually in Kabul.
Oh, okay.
The other site that's been renowned for abuses is called the discotheque. It's connected to the Bagram detention facility, and that's north of Kabul.
Uh-huh. And this Bagram facility, in the report it says, the Amnesty International country report, it says that there are 500 people still being held there while they're waiting to be transferred to Guantanamo Bay sometime in 2007. Has that already happened, or do you know?
No, I don't think that has happened. I have... that I have first-hand reports from a couple of African-American people who worked at Bagram as translators for the U.S. Army, and they did not like what they saw there. The report from Amnesty International, March 1st, 2006, say that detainees have said they were stripped naked, hooded, humiliated, handcuffed, and shackled for days, forced to maintain painful postures for hours at a time, and subjected to sleep deprivations. Apparently, conditions for many of the detainees involved have improved since the latter part of 2005. It's also important to know that 8 Afghans are known to have died in U.S. custody in Afghanistan.
Well,
the hundreds of detainees that are now in U.S.-controlled facilities have no recourse to human rights safeguards, so they cannot challenge their arrest or detentions. Some have been detained without charge or trial for more than a year and have no access to lawyers or relatives. The International Committee of the Red Cross has been able to visit the detainees in Bagram, but not in the forward operating bases or other places which have not been acknowledged of detention. It is a very, very sore point for many people in Afghanistan because every time one does get released back because they have not found that they were actually guilty, a whole community turns against the U.S. It's one of those unfortunate side effects of detaining people that have not been found guilty.
Right, yes, I remember a news story maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago now about an old man, I believe in his 80s, who was released from Guantanamo Bay and sent back to Afghanistan. Turns out he was innocent after all.
Sad story.
And just imagine if that was, you know, for any of us in the anybody in the audience, or for you or me or anybody, imagine they arrest your father, your grandfather, they hold him in you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, hold him in complete legal limbo under under torture, and then they say, oh, sorry, this guy was innocent. Here's your 80-year-old grandfather back. You know, and these are places, I guess, unlike you know, suburbs in Austin, Texas. These are places where you're talking small villages where everybody knows everybody, very tight-knit communities, and this is the kind of thing that causes rage. That, I mean, how would we feel if somebody kidnapped our grandfather for a few years and tortured him and then gave him back and said, oh, sorry?
Yeah, this is unfortunately what has happened. The mood in the country towards the U.S. is increasingly souring. I think when I first went there, and that was in 2004, I felt that people were still very optimistic, very supportive of our presence there. But that has changed dramatically over the last few years. and that worries me. Also, people in the President Karzai's government are now more and more opposed to his policies, and they are establishing what's called the United National Front. They would like to reduce the power of President Karzai and move to a parliamentary system.
Really? And this is a guy who has basically no power anyway, but I guess over the rest of the government he does. And so these are people inside the Karzai government are moving against him.
Yeah, I think we're going to hear more about that, because that's been kind of omitted in the media. There's also a lot of talk within the opposition group in Karzai's government about dealings with the Taliban, which would effectively give the Taliban power in some of the southern provinces. Not so good.
Right. Yeah, we've heard of that. Some of the models for compromise. And in fact, let me ask you about that, because I've never been to Afghanistan. I don't know anything about it. But it seems to me that basically we have a British drawn border here, and that really what we're talking about is Pashtunistan or something like that. And that basically there is no other power among the Pashtuns for them to have self rule other than the Taliban. Now, it's either that, or they're ruled by exiles who've just come back under American occupation, or Tajiks, or someone else.
The Taliban was primarily made out of people belonging to the Pashtu tribe, which is a big, powerful tribe. The Taliban, however, has been operating from across the border in Pakistan, and by most people who know about politics there, it seems that the role of Pakistan in supporting the Taliban is one that needs to change. The U.S. government, however, must find itself in a very precarious situation. On the one hand, they are supporting the government of President Musharraf in Pakistan, because, after all, they have the nuclear weapons, and they want to appease him. And at the same time, they also want to pressure him on reining in the Taliban, and especially as they are now operating pretty much in their own fiefdoms in the northwestern province frontiers and in Balochistan. It is the people of Afghanistan always say that the Taliban is not representative of who they are.
It really is just
a
foreign
important, thing to know about. They are very much aware that the Taliban was made out of young men who lived in refugee camps in Pakistan during the Mujahideen Wars. And they were then swept up into what's called the madrasas, the religious schools, and they were trained by the Pakistan Muslim extremists and were sent to Afghanistan to become what's known as the Afghan Taliban.
So in essence, the Taliban itself was a foreign-backed exile government, and you believe that If the Pakistani government wasn't propping them up, that the people of southern Afghanistan would be able to set up their own self-rule without the Taliban. Is that basically it?
I believe that meddling of Pakistan in these issues has definitely been detrimental to the ability of the Afghan government to establish itself, yes.
Well, you know, I talked with Ivan Eland from the Independent Institute last week, and he was analyzing Pakistan policy, and he was saying that because America has stayed so long, instead of going in and getting al-Qaeda, you know, killing bin Laden and Zawahiri and getting out of the country as fast as possible, because we've stayed as this foreign occupying force, and because we've so closely tied Musharraf's identity with that of the United States, that we've really weakened his position and forced him into a spot where he's had to now make all kinds of expansive deals with the tribal warlords, with people in the government who favor the Taliban, for example, that he basically has to compromise with all of these forces because of America's presence. What do you think about that?
Getting into, you know, personal opinions and
a little too far afield for you. That's okay.
And I want to make sure that people understand that as a representative of Amnesty International, I cannot comment on political issues because we are not a political organization.
I understand. Okay, so let me ask you this then. When you say that the people are losing confidence in the occupation, that they used to have some, and now they're more and more seem to be turning against it, would they prefer, you describe in the Amnesty report, just a complete breakdown in security, in law and order. You know, when people are arrested, they're held without charges, but then the worst crimes go unpunished, and it's just, the place seems to be in a downward spiral. Do the people there want America to improve the security situation, or do they want America to just pack up and get out and let them handle it themselves, which we see in Iraq that basically it's gotten to that point. So I wonder what your perception of that
My
is.
My general sense is that in spite of being critical of process progress made by the Afghan government, that a lot of people are still feeling that we need a presence there, including the NATO presence and the presence of the U.S. Military forces. They fear that without them there, that there will be a return to some pretty intense fighting between the warlords, which still reign, especially in the north and west of Afghanistan, but also that the Taliban would be able to establish itself quite quickly if we were to draw our forces back. That patience is being tested a lot lately because of the increase in civilian deaths and also because a lot of people really aren't seeing that the economy has improved much at all. There is a growing small group of very rich people. As I travel to Kabul, I see the extreme poverty. And within the extreme poverty are major, you know, sites of wealth, and which is in huge buildings, very expensive to stay at hotels for Westerners. And people are clearly upset by that because within the majority of the population, economic situation has not improved at all. And so, you know, the economy, the economic outlook coupled with the increasing civilian death and complaints by detainees of their rough handling at detention centers run by U.S. Forces is definitely undermining the support for the U.S. forces' presence there.
Mm-hmm. And on the economic front there, I think it's mentioned in the Amnesty report that there's also a drought going on. And I remember there was a major famine in Afghanistan in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
Is this still that same drought going on, or it started again? How bad is it? How many refugees are we talking about?
We are talking people eating mud because they are so hungry, and places in like Kandahar. This is very serious. The World Food Program last year had to plead with international aid organization to deliver food supplies also to places up in the north of the country. It is the drought seems to be back. It was better a few years ago, but the drought is definitely affecting people's lives again. So it's an extremely poverty-stricken country, probably one of the worst for people to live in at this point. We are talking about still very high infancy deaths, death of women at childbirth. The life expectancy is about 42 for people there, which is pretty amazing. Most people my age would be dead. One of the things I do want to mention too is the situation for Afghan women right now. It is still estimated that 90% of Afghan women experience frequent violence at home. And
90%?
Yeah, 95%.
95%.
There are women in parliament, but unfortunately there are no women among the president's advisors, and there's only really one in the cabinet. So as Seema Samar of the Afghan Independent Human Rights Commission says, if women are not part of the decision-making decisions, they men who don't understand women's problems will continue to make decisions and not address their problems. The continued problems for women there are forced marriages, child marriages, and restrictions of movement, job discrimination. The situation of children there is also pretty bad. There's child abduction and trafficking. And even though Afghanistan has signed the UN Convention on Children's Rights, which bans child labor, vast numbers of those children still work to help their families survive.
Yeah.
So, all in all, there have been some improvements, but that has been kind of contained for major cities. The women improvements have been contained to big cities. Once you're outside the big cities, like when I travel to the provinces, I never see women outside of the burqa. They are still in the burqa. It also needs to be understood that restrictions of women's ability to move were not just the result of the Taliban. They were already in place during the Mujahideen wars and before the Taliban instituted even more, restrictful rules on women. But they were there during the time the Mujahideen was fighting each other. That is often overlooked, I think.
Well, forgive me, but isn't this the kind of thing that goes all the way back? I mean, it seems like the most liberal governments, quote unquote, that Afghanistan's ever had have been the ones propped up by America and by the Soviet Union. I mean, they put girls in school too and that kind of thing. But without a colonial occupier dictating liberalism to these people, can we expect the local cultures there to you know, move toward women's liberation and so forth. This seems like a pretty heavy task for the U.S. Army to have to carry out, the liberation of all these people, you know?
It is a pretty heavy task. I think by all means, a lot of the people who do serve in the U.S. military are there because they do believe they are helping the Afghan parliament in establishing a more democratic government, which would include women as equal partners in the process. I don't know if we have put enough money in it. Unfortunately, when the U.S. government decided to go to Iraq, a lot of assistance stopped flowing to the Afghan government, and I think that has been very detrimental to the chances of a democratically elected government there to be able to accomplish what they would like to accomplish. And the Afghan average person is now clearly understands what really happened when the U.S. decided to invade Iraq, and they feel very, very badly about the fact that so much of the resources have not gone to help out the Afghan government at this point. We all know that the consequences of that are now being felt.
Mm-hmm. Well, you sound pessimistic and yet hopeful. Can you tell me the areas in which you think that, you know, there is hope for improvement?
I still feel, this is on a personal basis, that there's some hope left. But a lot of the times, I am pessimistic. I just don't see that without continuous and increased international support, we are looking at a dire situation for Afghanistan. I think that we need to keep an eye on what happens with the formation of the United National Front right now, who wants to open talks with the Taliban. They also would like the U.S. forces to leave, which is, of course, not advertised greatly in America. There are people who feel like they want the U.S. forces to leave. The United National Front is not something that is the answer, from what I understand, to the problems there. They are comprised of a lot of divergent groups, including some major Northern Alliance forces who have been accused of major human rights abuses during the Mujahideen wars. So that this is something that I personally would like to find out more about. The government of President Karzai is very weak. There's a whole lot of corruption within the government, which reflects on the way the police asks for bribes from people. Also, the situation of the way Afghan police runs the jails in Afghanistan is a very questionable. There's a lot of complaints about Afghan people being abused by the Afghan police and in their jails. There are also I've also had personal reports from people on the ground in provinces like Ghazni, where detainees or suspected Taliban forces have been executed without being sent to court where they could question the reasons for their detention. So those are extrajudicial killings. Nobody has commented on that. However, I have had people telling me that this is happening. So there's a lot of worrisome things happening there.
All right. Well, thank you very much for all the bad news.
I'm sorry about that.
I'm sorry it came out sounding sarcastic. I actually really appreciate it. It's definitely hard work that you do and very necessary for the rest of us to understand what's going on in the world and our government's role in it. So I really do appreciate it very much.
Mm-hmm. I want to, in ending, also praise the incredible efforts which are being made by the Afghan Independent Human Rights Commission. They don't have a lot of money to work with, but they're working day and night on making both the U.S. government and the Afghan government responsible for what they're doing with the suspected detainees. And also their incredible work they do on behalf of women there.
And you say that's the Afghanistan Human Rights Commission?
Independent Human Rights Commission.
Oh. Okay, great. Well, thank you for that, too.
Well, thank you.
All right, everybody. That's Elsie Delare from Amnesty International. Thanks a lot for your time.